The following is a production of DifferentBrains.com.
Hi, and welcome to Spectrumly Speaking. I'm Becca Laurie, your household Aspie, your friendly life coach, and perhaps your favorite theme song from your TV show. I'm joined by...
Hi, I'm Dr. Lauren Gerber, and I'm a clinical psychologist and author of Autism and You. Looking forward to talking to you today, Becca. How was your weekend?
It was good, but I had sort of a busy work weekend. I had a lot of writing to do, so I tried to catch up on that. Did sneak in some yard work, though. We had a nice day here in New York.
We have been staying in and just hanging out and doing a lot of eating this weekend. So I'm glad to get back to the work week and maybe some exercise.
Yep, absolutely.
Well, today I'm excited to announce that we have one of my favorite people here. We have a dog trainer by the name of Pamela Kent. She is both American Kennel Club Evaluator and Therapy Dogs International Evaluator. And she is the one who I called when I moved to Florida several years ago with Giovanni to come and train him. And at the time, I was the director of a center for autism. So I'm very excited to have her come and speak. She is also has her own dog, Angelique, and she will tell us about that as well. So welcome, Pamela.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
In the news a lot lately are how animals can work with individuals in so many different ways. But I want to first start with how you became a dog trainer and a little bit about your journey, if you'd share with us.
Sure. I would say 15 years ago, I really got interested. I've always had a dog, always. Maybe two at once, but mostly single. But never got into real training. So I got into volunteer work with groomers and vets and anybody who needed somebody to do extra work, so I could get to know all breeds. And then I got my little Angelique, a little miniature poodle, and that's when I started getting serious with my training. So I went and did classes. Angelique, of course, grew up and got certified with everything that there was out there with AKC and Therapy Dog International. In the meantime, I kept still training with, her name was Francine, and I talked her into going out on her own. So we became partners. It was called Let's Go Get Smart, and we started training together, mostly classes of, you know, groups of dogs. So we did that for a few years, and then I felt it was time for me to move on and go on my own way because I really had my own different ideas on training. So that's what I did. And I went strictly mouth to mouth, word to word from different clients that I knew and did one-on-one. And that's what I still do. And Dr. Lauren called and not sure how you got me.
I think I looked up local trainers in South Florida that were TDI evaluators.
Okay.
Because at the time I was working as the director of a center for autism and Giovanni and I were going through a personal hard time. When I moved to Florida, I came here with two dogs, Bear, a 12-year-old white Labrador, and Giovanni, 10-year-old black Labrador. And Bear passed away. And so Gio and I were going through a bit of a sadness and grief about having lost Bear. And I thought we could use some retraining, both myself as the handler and Giovanni as my therapy dog. And so I thought, what a perfect time to bring in a trainer and have them work with us and get us back up to speed on all the basics, from sitting to staying to listening to looking at me. So we had to go through our paces, and I called up Pamela, and she arrived. And she came and trained Gio on site at the Center for Autism, which was really, really neat. And there were children there in school. So Gio was walking in the classrooms and sitting with children and just being his all around loving self. And today, I have to say, when Pamela came in, Gio was absolutely so excited. He started talking and misbehaving. And I thought, oh no, she's going to think we need retraining again. It was really funny.
Yeah. So,
but he's wonderful. He just thought, oh boy, it's time to work again. You know, that's one thing you find out the more you work with training your dog, the more you understand how much they need that, because it's just like breathing. They enjoy it so much. And it's an exercise with you and your dog that they just never forget. And that's why they don't forget the trainers, because you bring, as a trainer, you bring that to their life. And mm-hmm. they're grateful for it, believe it or not.
Yeah. Well, since we're talking specifically about therapy dogs, I have Walter and Lauren has Gio. Maybe you could answer a question for us that I know personally I get asked all the time. I don't know about you, Lauren, but could you just share with everyone the difference between a service dog, a therapy dog, and an emotional support dog?
Certainly. As you know, a lot of people, especially here in South Florida, I don't know about New York, but a lot of people have been abusing the service dog aspect of how they should be treated, all right? As a service dog, let's start with a service dog. They specifically are trained, okay, to do a service for an individual, whether it be mobility, sight, hearing. Sometimes they include diabetes, okay? So it would be the scent of dogs picking up that sugar is low, whatever. That is a true service dog. And, you know, they have been able to take pets and work with them depending on the service that's needed to become an individual's service dog. However, usually they come from being trained from a very young age to do specific jobs for an individual. Now, the emotional support, the benefit is companionship. Okay, so it's not like they're doing an actual service. This is a support. Emotional support is the benefit of that dog companionship for an individual. The therapy dog, okay, this is a whole different type of work. This dog is therapy for all people, not just the owner, so that you can take your dog as a certified therapy dog to children, to elderly, and they are loving and kind and give other people companionship with you as the owner.
So that's a good distinction. So Gio is trained TDI. So once a week, I'll take him to an assisted care facility that has mainly a geriatric population. And he'll walk up to the wheelchairs and sit next to them and look in someone's eyes, and they'll recognize him. And say, oh, Gio's here. And I remember when I had a dog, and that dog could be 50 years ago, it's gone to heaven, but they're so mm-hmm. excited to see Giovanni. Or I can take him over to an adult center with adults on the spectrum who are living together here in Boca Raton called JARC. And he'll walk around and everybody comes up to him and wants to lead him around and sit with him and talk with him and play with him. So he's giving everybody love and support. So yeah. Not just me, he's being brought with me to help everybody else.
Yeah. And I think for me, you know, Walter probably sits in the role more of his emotional support animal most of the time. But it was very important to me because of how I do my job and how my autism affects my life, that I was able to bring him when I travel places. So one of the things that I did with him when we rescued him from the shelter, and I got him home, and we just kind of became aware that he was super smart and he needed more challenging behaviors and things to learn. Otherwise I knew my house would be ripped to shreds. So it was a really good opportunity for me to you know, allow him to be trained as a therapy animal so that I could travel with him, but also that he could maybe fulfill some of my support needs that aren't really out there in the world for adults. And then the more that I used him, the more I felt that that was really kind of an important piece to be sharing with our community. We don't really talk about service animals and emotional support animals often. But for me, as an adult, there's not supports out there for me. They're just not in the numbers that they need to be. So for me, I was able to take Walter and his abilities and the things that he does for me and kind of gear him to learn that acceptable behaviors were the ones that I needed. So when he's out with me, of course he can, I can take him places to, you know, like nursing homes and such. But for the most part for me, he goes to the places that give me anxiety. So when it comes to traveling, the supermarket, in general, large stores, and he keeps me really focused on being able to get in and out. And while I love seeing how happy people are when they see him, I'm kind of like in a panic and need him. And so it's hard to sort of refocus. But what I do notice is that when people do ask questions about him, for me, it's like, and I've said this before to you, Lauren, he's like a social pacifier for me. It kind of directs the conversation so that it doesn't feel as invasive to me, which is really lovely. So he's kind of a mixed-geared animal, I'd say.
I would say so, too. And I think that's very important that people understand that you not only have this emotional support companion, you also need this service, okay? So therefore, you have a combination of a service dog and an emotional support dog. You are definitely right there, because a lot of people are in need of this. And I think it's a wonderful thing. And I think trainers could definitely help people on this end, depending on whether or not they need a specific dog that is trained as a service dog, or take your pet and help them become your service dog. And only a trainer can do that.
Yep. So that for me was also my trainer. I loved watching the way that I got to see kind of Walter grow up, I guess, and sort of develop. He just went from being this really insecure puppy to being a really confident dog. But then at the same time, you know, it was a really important relationship set up for us, because he really started to learn my needs. And I started to learn where I could use him and he could be helpful for me. So he was doing a job and he was mentally stimulated and I was being serviced. And it was like this really wonderful story about this rescue animal who otherwise would have not had a home. And now he has a job.
You have to understand that there's only so much you can expect from a dog that's your pet. You follow what I mean? You can't expect too much. You can only wait it out as they grow older, because dogs do change. Yep. And if they haven't been trained since they were babies to do a specific job, you know, your job is all encompassing. A lot of it is emotional. So you have to be careful on how much to expect from your pet.
Absolutely. Because at the same time, you know, this is his home. So he's with me all the time, but that doesn't mean he's working all the time.
Right. You don't want to burn him out.
Exactly.
And that brings up to the question a little bit about what breeds are best and if there's a best breed. Giovanni is a black Labrador. He's 100 pounds. He's a big coconut head. And he is loving and sweet, and right from the get-go seemed to want to share his love and attention with everyone that came near him. So his personality, I think, is what made me think he might be good to be a dog that I could bring with to work to help other people. How does someone identify that, Pamela? How do they know what breed to look at or where to go?
Okay, well, there's no such thing as a special breed unless you need a larger breed for mobility. I know when we were working with your children, they were able to take a hold of the handle on his vest and walk with him. It's because a big dog can handle that, whereas a little tiny one, like my poodle, would not be able to do that kind of service, if you will. So it all depends on what you're looking for to help you with. The smaller the breed, the easier it is to go everywhere because you can carry the dog or, you know, have the dog in a stroller or something, or a walker or something maybe that you need for your own specific handicap. So you don't think breed, you think size. What size is good for what I need? Because any dog will work. And then, well, I think you were going to talk about kitty cats. I know because we have horses that are do therapeutic work, pigs, potbelly pigs, chickens, all the farm animals. They can be wonderful.
The other day animals. I called you and you said you're at the farm all morning.
Yeah.
So can you tell us a little bit about that, what you're doing?
Okay. Well, I just own a horse that is boarded at a specific barn that they do. Dr. Blair Rice does therapeutic work with emotionally challenged people, as well as people who are in rehab from drugs or alcohol. So adults, young adults, whatever, who are in rehab, they come out to the farm, and she has the horses there, and they do all kinds of exercises to help, you know, emotional support. Get out there what's bothering them and let the animal take over. So it's very interesting. And the children, of course, are in heaven because she has every animal on the farm. A duck, chickens, bunnies, ducks, and they are in heaven.
Yeah, I mean, since we are talking other breeds, I guess I'll talk about my cats for a little bit, because one of the challenges that I had with Walter, and really was going to be a challenge with any dog that I ended up with, is that I have six cats. So you take a dog, you put him in a house with six cats, and you hope. It's kind of how I felt. I hadn't grown up with dogs. So the first time I've lived anywhere, I've been allowed to have a dog. So I've always been a cat person. Bringing Walter into a house where there's six cats and you're saying, ignore your prey drive all the time, can be really, really, really challenging, especially because he's a Beagle, Basset, and Lab mix. So he's got a hound nose that will take him everywhere. But I needed to find a balance for that, because in my life, I so have learned to rely on my animals for much of my mental health, which a lot of people think is sort of strange. But, you know, growing up undiagnosed and not really getting the supports that I needed most of my life, I learned lots of different coping mechanisms. And one of them was absolutely meeting my needs by making sure I had cats. So I've never lived at all in all 40 years of my life without a cat in my house. Now I have six and I have Walter. And probably the happiest place you can find me is in bed under my weighted blanket with Walter giving me deep pressure on my legs and like one or two cats purring near my head. And so for me, you know, that setting up that household arrangement was a really difficult thing.
And it's, you know, if you had Walter from the time he was a baby with all these cats, then he's grown up with them, correct?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And that's a big key. But just think about people who have an older dog who want to have a cat.
Yep.
And now this is strange. So that's where training comes in. And yes, you can train a dog how to behave with other animals in the house, whether it's birds, cats, pigs, anything.
Right. And I feel like that's a really important thing for people to understand. It is not true. It is a myth that cats and dogs don't get along. It's really, it made an effort on our part. And I think needing to teach Walter how to kind of physically be around the cats, because of course their instincts come into play about being prey, and then they run, which then makes them prey again. And then it's sort of like a whole thing, but a lot of that gets triggered by Walter's behavior. So like, I have to learn to control my behaviors. I had to teach him how to do that. He had to walk slower when he was coming up to the cats. If he's going to jump up onto the bed and they're there, he has to kind of be aware of them. He's 70 pounds, so he could just sit on one of them. And it's sort of learning to do that. But I think all of those components can be so useful to someone on the spectrum. Learning that sense of responsibility, giving your life kind of that routine of taking care of your animals and teaching them to socialize together is, you know, really it's exciting to see their relationships develop, but it's good practice.
Yeah, and your chapter is extra special because you have a hound dog.
Yeah. Yes.
Your challenge is right up there at the top.
Yeah.
Because, you know, you got a hunter, you got mm-hmm. a hound dog who yep. you're trying to say, no.
Yeah. I wish I was very polite like that and said no most of the time. But a lot of times it's like, wait, no.
Positive reinforcement, Becca. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I'm sure you've heard it a million times.
Yeah, we do a lot of, oh, that was so good. Careful, Walter. Good boy. So, yeah, it's been interesting, that development of their relationship. But because he is a dog that was raised with the cats, he did take on some cat behaviors as a dog, which is interesting as well to see that he's that trainable. But, yeah.
It's really neat. What a beautiful scene that you introduced with the cats and Walter in bed with you and just all cuddled up and giving comfort. Because I think that we as humans sometimes rescue dogs and give them a home. And I think they give us a home too, when they join our lives.
Yep.
And it's such an amazing match. It's a match made in heaven.
Absolutely. And then, you know, I don't know, I think we should maybe, if you're willing to discuss it, Pamela, could we talk a little bit about some of the stigmas and prejudices that we get? Sometimes people don't believe that you have a service animal, you have a need. I get that a lot, obviously, because people think, you know, I don't look like I have autism. That's part of that stigma conversation. So they don't see the need for a service animal. And then they think that he's not one.
Let me talk about a couple of those things, because I think those are very important topics. And then Pamela can jump in there in terms of the animal component. But if you Google autism service dog, Wikipedia's definition, which is interesting. An autism service dog is a service dog trained to assist an autistic person to help them gain independence and the ability to perform activities of daily living similar to anyone else. So mm-hmm. for the most part, these dogs are trained to perform tasks similar to those of service dogs for any other sensory kind of processing disorder. Mm-hmm. What's interesting about that definition is you are dealing with the stigma of people, A, don't know what somebody who has autism is experiencing because they're not having autism. You are. Mm-hmm. And B, they don't know when you have that service dog, how it's helping you, and they're inquisitive. So a lot of things come up, I think, when somebody is walking with their service dog. A lot of questions come up.
Yep.
You don't have to answer anyone. You don't have to give anybody a reason for why you have your dog with you. You have, I'm assuming you have a certification of some sort somewhere mm-hmm. that you carry.
Mm-hmm.
So that's important. If you have people who are just being nosy, if you feel like talking, fine. If you don't feel like talking, fine. You don't have to feel like you're on the spot with anyone other than a higher authority, which would be a police officer, obviously. But other than that, just regular public people who want to question you about things, you don't have to do that. Please hold your head up and don't feel that you need to explain anything to anyone, because you don't.
Yeah. And that is something that I hear trainers say all the time. I love that. That's the lesson of life that comes with a therapy dog training, is that you don't have to answer to anybody and that you can say no. It took me a while to not feel guilty about it, but people do. They want to pet Walter. And for me, it can trigger anxiety because it means I'm being put kind of in a stranger, unknowing social situation in line, probably in a store that's already making me uncomfortable. There are times when I'm okay with it and times when I'm not. So I've learned how to say no. But then sometimes, you know, you see an opportunity to really educate somebody. I'm like, well, you know, it's not, you know, a therapy dog is not a service animal and this kind of thing. But in this scenario, he's doing this job for me. And it's been an interesting experience for me to learn how to explain it, not using the training terms that I've learned, but being able to explain it to a layman, kind of what his job is and where he is. And I get a lot of kids, actually, that are just fascinated. But what's interesting to me is adults will interrupt me all the time and say, can I pet Walter? I don't know if you have this happen to you, Lauren, but adults all the time, sometimes they don't even ask, they just pet him.
Yes.
Kids have grown up and learned that these dogs are working and they're not allowed to pet. And so the kids will always ask, is it okay? Can I, this? And it's so interesting to me that adults have no politeness skills whatsoever.
So the kids have the manners and will mm-hmm. say, is it okay to approach your dog?
Mm-hmm.
And the adults just get into your space without yep. even giving you any warning.
Get into my space, get into Walter's space. And it's like, it's, I don't know if it's a New York thing. It might very well be, but it's really kind of like, oh, and you know, because Antonio, my boyfriend, and I usually go together. And a lot of times we've learned that a lot of times it's better for him to handle Walter when we're out, because everything's so distracting for me. I'm not giving Walter the proper commands and the proper attention, so it's confusing to him. So many times we'll swap who's actually on the lead when we're out in public. And he has no tolerance for it. It's like, the minute that you go to pet the dog without asking, he just interrupts and is like, nope, you can't touch the dog. Sorry, he's working. Because if people don't ask, he wants nothing to do with them. And it's really, you know, he's much better at it than I am, because I'm always wanting to like nurture and caregive and fix it and how can I help you and that stuff.
So interesting. So different handlers, different people, and with the dog and how yeah. that works.
We both had to take, well, we both did the training together. That's how we wanted to do it. And I know some people don't train with two handlers, but we wanted to train with two handlers. So we both trained, we both tested. We had to make sure that we were able to do that and swap handling for my situation.
That's really
great. Some people don't, but I had to make that accommodation for myself.
Do you have an emotional support helper too?
I do. I definitely do.
And if people, you know, if people want to see more about Pamela Kent's dog, she has a dog, her poodle does Ring Toss, and it's on YouTube, and it says Poodle Does Ring Toss is the name. And Angelique uh-huh. is adorable. And I've seen Angelique dressed up in a tutu and going to visit various places to cheer people up who aren't feeling well or need some love and attention. So I wonder if cats can do that, like go out and be brought around to places. I haven't seen it yet. Have you seen that at all?
No.
I have seen it. Believe it or not, they do super well in nursing homes. If you go, there are some hospice care facilities where people are at the end of a terminal illness and they kind of need to be on care 24 hours. And for some reason, the cats do really, really well with that energy, that just keeping people very kind of calm. So I've seen that. My cats, personally, I don't know, maybe one or two of them could get away with that.
Yeah, that's the one thing about cats. Usually they are free roaming in these hospice homes. Mm-hmm. So it's not like the owner brings, like
right.
the dog would bring the dog to come see individuals. The cats are kind of free roaming, mm-hmm. and they will go and jump in the bed or, you know, try to give some kind of emotional support on their own. However, cats can be, you know, create a lot of allergies.
Yep.
So there's, you know, even dogs, there are some dogs who aren't hypoallergenic either. So, you know, there's a lot to be considered before you put an animal in a place to go see people for therapy.
Yeah. I mean, I remember, especially for Walter, I don't know how you had it with Gio, but Walter being a hound, the hardest part of all of the TDI training was like, don't pick up the food. Like, please don't. I know it smells interesting. Please don't. Because again, we bring our animals into these nursing homes or into hospitals, and we don't want them picking up pills off the floor or accidentally eating someone's food, or, you know, you just don't want them taking things out of people's hands. And for me, that was a challenge with Walter. He wouldn't necessarily eat everything, but he had to smell everything.
How did you choose him?
He chose me. I know that sounds crazy. I didn't choose him with the intention of having a therapy dog. We had had a 15-year-old dog. She passed away. We waited a little bit, went to the shelter, and Walter was adorable. We took him out, and he sat on my legs and licked my ear, and that was kind of over at that point. He had kind of chosen me, and that was it. But we got him home, and he was learning things faster than we could teach it to him. And it seemed unfair to not give him the chance to really be trained in something that was kind of a next level for his stimulation. So I said, well, we'll train him. And if he can pass the test, great. And if he can't, he'll be a super trained dog. So that's sort of what we did. And that was the challenge line. It was definitely smells.
Would you advise anyone else to do it that way? Or would you advise someone to actually bring an experienced person with them to, if they were looking for a puppy to, you know, be their therapy or emotional support or service?
Well, yeah, I think if you're seeking a dog for that, I don't know that I would necessarily do it that way without somebody coming with me. But okay. I think it's also, you know, if you're going to get a puppy, you never really, it's just like getting a baby. You never really know what you're going to get. So, you know, we kind of recognized his intellect and said, well, what can we do with this smart dog before he eats our house? And that was sort of the path that I took. I think some people want an already trained service animal or a therapy animal, which is great, but I know the waiting lists are huge. And I also know that to get one pre-trained is upwards of like $20,000, I think. And many people, frankly, can barely afford the supports that they have right now, let alone to get a pre-trained, you know, a lot of people wait, they want, you know, a dog for their 4-year-old kid, and, you know, they get a dog by the time their kid is 8. So they're on a waiting list waiting for a pre-trained dog. And so if you see potential in your dog, as long as you don't hold them to a standard they can't meet, you know, and you don't hold them to an expectation you can't keep.
Exactly. That's why I was trying to explain that to you. You know, just understand there's only so much they're going to be able to do for you. And you can't burn them out, you know, and you have to give them a chance. But I can tell you that, yes, an experienced person can go look with you. Mm-hmm. And you can get an idea of a personality from a puppy. And if they're worked with from the time you bring them home by somebody with experience, you'd be surprised at the difference between that and just saying, oh, this one is the one I love because you know, fell in love with love at first sight or whatever. You need help. You really need help if this is your goal to have a dog that's going to be helpful to you.
Yeah. I just happened to get lucky in that he just was so willing to please and wanting to learn that we just took advantage of it when he was a pup, you know, without, you know, if he passes, he passes. If he doesn't, he doesn't kind of attitude.
That was perfect.
Yeah. So I got very lucky at the shelter, but I think I would do it all over again. It was really challenging for me too. I had to learn again, you know, I've been around animals my whole life. I was a vet tech, so I had experience with dogs, but I'd never had a dog that was mine. Yeah. You know, that was in my family that, you know, we loved that way. And so it was a very interesting experience for me to learn, to find my dog voice, because cat voice is very quiet. Dog voice is not so quiet. I had to find that strength in my voice. I had to find the body posture for him. I had to, it's very rigorous, I think, you know, with a dog, you have to be paying attention all the time because they're looking to you all the time for guidance. And cats are sort of like, you could guide them all you want, but they're, you know, they'll do what they like. If they feel like breaking the rules, they're going to do it.
One thing that I'm thinking right now about Giovanni, because he's sleeping in my office right now, he's laying on his back with his legs sprawled out and he's snoring pretty loudly. I don't know if you can hear him where you are. he's not working right now. He's just coming out. He's taking a nap in the office. Whereas when I have someone in here a patient who's sitting next to him, he looks at them intently and he'll give them his paw. And he has all sorts of things that he does to show them that he's part of the therapy and part of the room. But right now, as we're doing this conversation, he's just chilling out and relaxing. And so there's that independence there. And you described with the cats, they can be very, very independent. Each personality is different.
Yep.
It's very important for an individual who's going to have an animal that's going to be a special service to them, to bond with them and for their personalities to work together, and for a good, good, solid trainer to come in and work individually with that person, with their dog, if it's a dog they already have, or to pick out a dog specific to their needs, if it's a service that they're going to be getting a service for. Now, you know, some of the things I was Googling websites and places that you could go to look for service animals, and there are so many of them. 10 pages came up. Autism Service Dogs of America, all the way down to Assistance Dogs for Autism, and the list goes on and on and on. And as I printed some information about what can they be trained for, it was every possible symptom of individuals on the spectrum, which is a very wide group of things.
Yeah.
You know, helping with balance and motor control. I know Pamela discussed with Gio how he has this big harness with a handle, and little kids who are learning some of their gross motor skills would hold on to him, to helping with deep pressure tasks like you were describing with your dog snuggling you in the bed, to make sure that if something's dangerous, if a child or an adult may leave a center or a place, that dog's going to alert someone and bark and say, oh, someone's eloping, something is going on here. All these different services, and there's just so many, too many to list. But if someone is interested in this area, and they can get onto a computer, there's tons of information out there. Some of the bigger groups have sites just for going through the various supports that exist in this country.
This was a great show, and I thank you, Pamela, for your time. It was really great to have you.
Thank you.
And if you contact us here at Different Brains, we can connect you, if you're in South Florida, with Pamela Kent. And she's just wonderful, and she's Giovanni's trainer, and I thank her so much for being here today. It's been an honor having her. I think that it might be time for the news. There have been a lot of articles, Becca, that have been out recently, and since I'm from Chicago, Illinois, I pulled one from the Chicago Tribune. Little six-year-old boy, Jason, who got a dog, which was really, really exciting. And it was hard for his family to even believe it was happening when they received Sage. And they received Sage from the nonprofit Service Dogs by Warren Retrievers, SDWR, which is a big group that places dogs and a lot of dogs for families that have a child affected by autism. So it's just a beautiful, beautiful story. And there's a little video that goes with it if people Google it online to see that story. But I love to hear when children are matched up with a dog, adults as well, like yourself. But when a family gets a dog for a child who really, really can use the love, the unconditional love, the support, the hugs, you know, like you said, the deep pressure hugs that a dog can give. And it's magnificent. So that article brought tears to my eyes. It was very exciting.
It's a super sweet one. And there's been a few of those, you know, where you see kids that have either grown up with their therapy dogs, or they maybe have another medical condition in addition to their autism. And so the dogs are in the hospital with them. It's very reassuring, I think, to have your dog with you when everything else feels out of control. They're very stabilizing, it feels like to me.
You called yours the pacifier, which I think is the most beautiful terms for a dog. But I think of also the animals like a transitionary object too. Like if you had a blankie and you were in the hospital as a child, if you have your dog that you're used to having, everything is a little less scary because you have something living and breathing and its heart beating next to you, and you just feel better.
I absolutely agree. I think I'll talk about my news story, which is it's along the same lines, but it's about a cat. So there's this really, really lovely story about, it's about a year old, but it's one of my favorite stories because they just had their book come out. So the little girl's name is Iris Grace. She's on the spectrum and she's about seven now, I guess, six or seven. And she's a very, very talented artist, but she was struggling with some of her social areas. And then the family got a cat that she bonded with very well. And she was completely attached to, and they went and they had her, you know, given as an emotional support animal. And then she eventually became a therapy cat. So the cat's name is Tula, and she's lovely. There are a bunch of videos. You can watch the two of them in the bath and spending time together and the things that they, you know, that they do together. They're very hyper bonded. It's really a lovely story. And Tula is a Maine Coon, which is my breed of choice, which happened by accident. But they seem to be the preference for people on the spectrum for cats that are therapy cats. So I just loved seeing this little girl. It was like looking back at myself. I think the cats have been my special interest probably as far back as I can remember. So seeing this little girl with her cat was like looking back at pictures of myself a little bit.
Growing up, I always had a dog, and into adulthood, Giovanni's like my sixth dog. So I can completely understand this bringing back childhood memories and your love for cats and how connected they can be with people. I think the connection between an animal and a person is very unique.
Mm-hmm. It's a really interesting thing. You know, people are always, they love to talk about the difference between cats and dogs. And for me, I think it's become more apparent to me when I look at it through the lens of a therapy cat or an emotional support cat, and through the lens specifically of autism. As I look at Walter and I think, you know, dogs are very external in their behavior. They're very externalizing. They let you know they're there. They're very much, you know, proactively kind of seeking you. Whereas cats really bond with like one person, and that's all that they care about is that one person. And you kind of have to seek them. They're very internalizing. So they're very quiet. They go away when they don't want to be bothered. And so there's a totally different dynamic in that relationship. It's a kind of a calmer, quieter relationship, and the energy is very high, I find, with the dogs. And with cats, it's also very low most of the time. So it depends on the energy that I'm seeking, I think, that makes me choose between one or the other.
That's really neat to hear. I love that story about cats. I'm glad you were able to share that with everybody.
I think that about wraps it up for today. Please check out Different Brains on their Twitter at @DiffBrains and look for them on Facebook. I can be found at BeccaLaurie.com or on Facebook or LinkedIn.
And I can be found at DrLaurenGerber.com. Please be sure to rate and subscribe to this podcast on iTunes, and don't hesitate to send us questions for our future shows. And we look forward to keeping this conversation going here at Spectrumly Speaking.
Spectrumly Speaking is a production of Different Brains. For more information, visit us at differentbrains.com.